there are fascinating developments currently playing out in Charlotte right now. As we speak, the Jerry Richardson statue in front of Bank of America Stadium is being removed. Now, the big question is it being removed for good or is it just simply being moved? The Panthers have announced it's just an attempt to protect the statue from being attacked and grabbed by protesters. Boy, Robert, if only somebody paid women employees of the Panthers the same courtesy when Richardson was there. Hey-o! It gets crazier, though. As Jerry's representation moments ago just released a statement, and I'll read that to you now. Mr. Richardson has made no public comments about the Panthers or the NFL since the sale of the team and doesn't plan to do so as a private citizen. Okay, that seems to be a good stance to stay. Maybe don't get involved in anything that's controversial. Here's the back end of the statement. He has worked to treat all people fairly in his business and personal life, and like many other Americans, is troubled by recent events in Minneapolis, Charlotte, and all across the country. Typical Jerry Richardson statement. The day that he sold the Panthers, which was the same day the Sports Illustrated report about Gene Fridays and all of that came out. Nowhere in the statement you saw a resemblance of an apology or acknowledgement of what was happening or why that was happening. Even in this statement here, there's nothing in regards to the statue, nothing of substance. And then he just randomly throws in there, oh yeah, we're thinking about the folks in Minnesota. Okay. Does anybody honestly believe Tepper's going to put that hideous peak of narcissism statue back up? He said he was contractually obligated to keep it up in his opening press conference. But every contract can be broken, especially when you're the richest donor in the NFL worth over $13 billion. You could figure that out. I don't want this to turn into the same discussion people have in Chapel Hill about Silent Sam. Hey, you got to acknowledge all parts of history. Got to keep the Confederate soldiers up. I don't think the conversation is nearly the same, nor is the outrage, but this is such a fascinating thing to follow. As I continue to see the videos put up in Charlotte of this statue being removed, it's just the latest example. In fact, it might be the final example of Tepper completely distancing the Carolina Panthers from the man who brought professional football to the Carolinas. He's done this in three different ways. Allegiance to the shield. When Richardson was the owner, Roger Goodell always knew, heck, Paul Tagliabue always knew he had Richardson in their corner. He was seen to be pro-NFL in almost every single way. If you were looking for an owner to bend on player-related issues, players' issues, you weren't going to find an ally in Mr. Richardson. Tepper's completely different. I mean, it's a big part of the reason Richardson, for the first 24 years of existence of Panthers football, had the NFL shield at the 50-yard line. It was a sign of the allegiance Richardson had to the league office. What does David Tepper do in the first few months of him being owner? Yeah, I think we're going to move that NFL shield off the 50. We could put our Panthers logo there now. Tepper, he never supported kneeling football players or anybody who was voicing their concerns on political or societal subjects. Trey Boston was on a podcast earlier this week, I think with Ian Rappaport, and said they were told explicitly they were discouraged from getting involved in any of that back in 2016. Well, that's completely changed. Tepper, a few years ago, not just supported kneeling football players, he called them patriotic. And it wasn't very popular to do so in the NFL at that time. It's crazy to think how far we've come in such a short period of time. Not only did he support them with his words, he signed Eric Reed. Secondly, he was more accessible, more approachable than Jerry Richardson. Richardson, he'd ride around on his golf cart on game day. He's always wearing a suit. And you would never see him in a media capacity, never get a chance to talk to him, never had a press conference, I think his last 10 years, close to it, as Panthers owner. So sometimes you might see him, but you never be able to approach him. Tepper, it's the exact opposite. He'll talk to anybody. He has shorts on, polo shirt. His first presser, he's waddling out there with his wide strides, two or three buttons down on the button-up, and he's got hair sticking out of his shirt. He's doing an Elvis Presley impersonation. It's a totally different guy. And the support of players. He speaks to Andre Smith last week, telling him, Tepper, to keep the movement going after the protests stop, after the hype dies down in the wake of George Floyd's death. Meanwhile, Jerry Richardson, one of his first encounters with Cam Newton after drafting him, was telling him not to get any tattoos. It's a stark 180, as the voice of the Panthers, Mick Mixon, told us on yesterday's show. Then there's the use of facilities. Not just removing the shield on the 50-yard line and putting the Panthers logo there in its place, but Richardson, he would never open up his hallowed ground, the holy sanctity of the football stadium in Uptown Charlotte, to high school football. It wouldn't happen. This year, Tepper plans to have a Carolina Classic game where a North Carolina school will play a South Carolina school, hoping to start a new tradition. Jerry Richardson would never have concerts at Bank of America Stadium because, again, it's a football stadium. Not supposed to have concerts there. Come on. What does Tepper do? Well, we never got a chance to see the Billy Joel concert in May or the Rolling Stones this summer or Garth Brooks. But those concerts very quickly sold out. And Tepper was saying, why not use this stadium for more? Why not? He criticized Richardson for not having a practice facility that's indoor. When you're running an NFL team, the fact that the Panthers in Tepper's first year had to have a practice in the convention center. He was bashing what came before him. How can you run a team this way? And he implemented the practice bubble that we saw all throughout the 2019 season. And now he has these state-of-the-art practice facilities that are going to go up in the summer of 2022. So if I had to bet, and it's not based on anything I've been told over the last few hours or based on any statement or report I've seen since then, I don't think this statue is going to go back up in front of Bank of America Stadium. I think we've seen the last of it today on June the 10th, 2020. You can tweet the show at Sports Hub Triad. Robert Walsh is the producer of this show. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. So while the Panthers are distancing themselves, continuing to do so, from their founder, Jerry Richardson, USC football is going to be allowed to get close to one of its all-time greats based on today's breaking news that Reggie Bush can be associated with USC again. The Committee on Infractions, part of the punishment levied against Bush, in addition to all the scholarships stripped away from USC, I think it was 30 scholarships, vacated wins in 2004, all the wins in the 2005 season. There was a cruel 10-year disassociation period hit on Reggie, which at that time, actually, when it was handed down, it was a permanent punishment, but then rule changes from the Committee of Infractions in 2017 said, nah, that's a little too harsh. We'll call it a 10-year penalty, and then the schools can decide if they want to get back with the punished party. Of course, USC wanted to have Reggie Bush back at their games. It was wrong for the NCAA to force USC to disassociate from Reggie Bush. Here's how ridiculous it is when you think about it. If you go through USC's facilities in Los Angeles, Robert, you see a bunch of jerseys and pictures of Heisman Trophy winners. And you will not see Reggie Bush's face, his image, his jersey, his Heisman, nothing. But do you know what you will see? The number 32 and a smiling face looking back at you that belongs to O.J. Simpson. That's how ridiculous this is. That the NCAA and college football powers it be won't step in and say, hey, for the image of the sport, we need you to disassociate from a guy who was, trying to think of the right way to put it, guilty in a civil court of a double murder and convicted in prison of kidnapping and armed robbery. Actual real crimes, you don't have to disassociate from that. But Reggie Bush, whose parents didn't pay rent on a house in 2004, and Reggie rode up in a limousine to the Heisman ceremony that was paid for by an agent, that guy, he needs to go away for 10 years. It's just absurd. Especially when you consider Reggie voluntarily forfeited his Heisman Trophy. To me, that's beyond enough punishment. It's an individual mistake served with individual punishment. I never understood the 30 scholarships loss, because what that effectively did was make USC irrelevant. And when USC is irrelevant, the Pac-12 is irrelevant. And when the Pac-12 and USC are irrelevant, nobody west of Nebraska gives a damn about college football. The NCAA with its decisions here, not just hurt Reggie Bush, not just hurt USC, it hurt the Pac-12, it hurt college football with their move. Bringing Bush back to USC just makes too much sense. Too much time has passed, because banning him from games and from campus, it wasn't a deterrent for people who might potentially serve, might potentially commit similar infractions. No one's thinking about that who are breaking those rules. It's just cruel. And it's beneath the NCAA's supposed values to do so. You make a mistake at 19, you're banished forever. It's just ridiculous. And for the record, I don't think they should erase O.J. Simpson, all that he did at USC. I don't think USC's wrong in having their stuff up. I just think it's ridiculous that if you go to a USC football game, you will see O.J.'s face and O.J.'s jersey, and you won't see Reggie Bush's.
It's not a good side-by-side.
No. Doesn't make a lot of sense. Steve Wiseman going to join us to talk about the Zion Williamson lawsuit at the bottom of the hour. B-Dot's going to be in here after that, so there's a lot for us to do. But on today's show, we're doing NFC over-unders. That's what we're doing today. And it starts with the Carolina Panthers and the NFC South. That's next on The Drive.
Real talky, but not real listening.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
So we've been covering this court case between Zion Williamson and his former representation, Gina Ford, for the last few weeks. Really, it's been a couple of months, but time just continues to bleed together, especially in the year 2020. We're being joined by Steve Wiseman, Duke Beat reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer. You can read his work, newsobserver.com. And the recent news today, you have Gina Ford, who again is calling for Zion and now Coach K to speak and answer questions about impermissible gifts that might have been given to Zion and his family in court. Florida said those are valid questions considering the arguments that Ford is trying to make. Zion is arguing, hey, you weren't registered in the state of North Carolina, so this contract that we had with you is null and void when Zion left with Gina Ford to go to CAA after he finished up his time at Duke at about this time last year. I know it could be very confusing. I don't want to get caught up too much in the weeds here, but explain this to me, Steve. What's most relevant to the triad here? Why are the locations of these filings so significant? Because Gina Ford, she is in contact with the Greensboro Federal Court, and that's also a very important piece of what Zion's defense is trying to do, it seems.
Right. So Gina Ford and Prime Sports Marketing are based in Miami, so they wanted to file the case on their home court, so to speak, right? So they felt, you know, state court should handle it. It's a Florida business transaction. Zion originally had filed his case in federal court in Greensboro, the middle district, which covers, you know, Durham County and all, and then through the triad. So that's why it's filed in the Greensboro federal court from Zion's point of view, because he was living in Durham at the time that he was at Duke. She met with him in Durham. In person, all the activities happen in Durham. So that's why they want it in the federal court system.
I get why Zion and Kay's testimony is relevant. Once again, I understand that. But didn't the NCAA already take a good hard look at Zion and his family after the Avenatti allegations?
They did. And they also did before he was declared eligible initially by the clearinghouse, you know, before you start playing for Duke. You know, background checks into finances, all that kind of stuff. You know, today in this court filing, she brought up some stuff about where he lived in Durham, the house they rented, you know, and that's always been a source of consternation, I guess, by people, you know, message board stuff from people that aren't Duke fans, put it that way.
Sure.
And that's never been, that's been vetted by Duke and the NCAA. So, you know, we'll see if that gets any traction in court or not. But those are the kind of things that she wants him to answer under oath. Right now, you know, the only word we have is, you know, from Duke's compliance and then the NCAA by extension, because they cleared him to play. So they had to look into this stuff. They say they did. So we kind of have to take them at their word. They're not answering questions about specifics, like, did you look into this contract at this house that they were renting and who owned it and that kind of stuff. They just say, we found nothing that, you know, compromises eligibility.
Follow Steve Wiseman on Twitter at SteveWisemanNC. Read his stuff in the pages of The Observer, newsobserver.com. Give me a percentage chance Zion or Kay testify.
Oh, I think it's less than 10%. I think it's less than 5%, to be honest with you. I think that there'll be a settlement before it would come to that. And there's also, you know, one way of reading the agent law that we've referred to here that says that it doesn't even matter if he was ineligible, that as long as he played for Duke, which he did, there's no question about that, that that makes him protected by this law. Whether he's found ineligible tomorrow, it doesn't matter. That's one interpretation of it. So we haven't even gone down that route in court yet, and that could be the final thing for Gina Ford that could throw her case completely out.
Interesting. It's just her, it seems like, trying to put pressure on Duke and on Zion to try and settle. Steve Wiseman with us here. I get NIL laws being passed in California. That's going to go into effect in 2023. And Florida, the law that they're passing that's going to be in effect at around this time next year. That would make Kevin White's statement from yesterday more top of mind. However, the points he made were many of the same arguments made 4-5 years ago, heck, even beyond that. Why didn't we hear from Kevin White these concerns before now, where it seems we're almost at the finish line with this type of stuff? Or did he make these concerns known? Or did he make these concerns known and I just missed it?
He didn't make them known publicly. I know that. Now, he's obviously a, you know, a pretty heavy hitter within the industry, and he was head of the men's basketball committee last year for the tournament that didn't happen. But that tells you the level of stature he has within college athletics. So, it was interesting that he came out with that statement shortly after, you know, Bubba Cunningham down the road at Carolina. It's unusual to see Duke and Carolina in lockstep, right? Is this a brand new world? What's going on here with 2020 with all this kind of stuff happening?
Yeah.
Right? But here they are getting along, and you know, dogs and cats living together, right? They both agree that this NIL thing is cautionary and that it might, you know, damage, you know, other sports and all that. So, yeah, that was a little bit of a surprise given the status of Duke right now, that, you know, you think they would be able to benefit from all this, right? And so they're going the other way.
Kevin White strikes me as someone who can read the room very well, though. Do you think he expected the blowback that he got yesterday?
Yeah, I think I agree with you that he is very astute and is good at reading the room. He rarely makes tone deaf comments. I mean, I've talked to him a lot for the last 10 years, and I can't remember it happening. So, I think he read the room, and to answer your question, I think he did expect the blowback. And I think that's just where he stands on it right now. He's sticking by what he believes, whether it's, you know, right or wrong in the long run or not.
Steve, I know you're a busy guy. Thanks so much for making the time in the Triad today.
Yeah, glad to be with you, Josh. Take care.
And you take care as well. That's Steve Wiseman joining us from the Raleigh News and Observer. B-Dot's hanging out in studio with us right now. He still has his mask on, making sure he's very safe.
Yep.
And as we were talking to Steve, I'm looking at video of this Jerry Richardson statue being lifted, and I've got some terrible news, Robert, to pass along right now.
No, what is it?
They're removing the Panthers as well.
No, not the Panthers.
What did those Panthers ever do? Those Panthers didn't institute Gene Friday and encourage employees to cut his toenails or whatever weird bleep Jerry Richardson told women to do.
Those Panthers can't even wear jeans or cut their toenails.
And apparently they have incorrect, like, anatomy as well. Like, the genitalia isn't exactly what Panthers would have.
Oh, yeah, that really perturbed me, man. When they put those statues up, I was underneath them like a mechanic in a car shop. Like, hang on, I've seen a Panther's genitalia, and let me tell you one thing. It's not this. That could be a good segment. Let me genitalia.
You want to tell us more about Panther genitalia? I remember doing a radio segment. You might have been with me when I did this, trying to figure out the difference between a panther and a jaguar. Because I got
yes,
nothing.
That was us.
I've got nothing.
Don't laugh at us, B-Dot.
What is the difference between a panther and a jaguar?
I mean,
336-777-1600. What's the difference between a panther and a jaguar?
I think I remember jaguars are smaller Yeah. And you had me do that like 17 times that day.
Because that's good.
Wait, do what? Got it.
Jaguars are like smaller and they're faster, but I think panthers are larger and more like brute strength killers. But both of them like eat in trees. Like, they'll bring their prey up in the tree and eat there.
Are you sure it's not just spots?
I don't remember.
Like, the jaguars have spots.
Well, I mean, like, there are like black
jaguars do have
too.
Spots that,
but you can't see the spots. Oh, you can see.
You can see jaguar spots, I think,
but not the panthers in regular light. Like, panthers also have spots, but it's like this light spot underneath the fur. I'm not sure.
Understood.
We talked about this like 3 years ago.
I'm about to say, how are y'all such experts on felines?
Well, also, I used to just watch animal videos before Josh's show. He would come in like an hour before and be like, "What are you doing?"
I'm
like,
right.
Just watching.
Hey, dude, check out these elephants.
Josh is like, shut up about these elephants.
All right. I want a detailed report before we're all said and done on the difference between Panthers and Jaguars.
I would rather do that than a detailed KBO update.
Oh, shoot. We have to do that, too. Coming up.
Gosh.
As I mentioned, B-Dot's here. NFC East over-unders are on the way. And Chris Farley? Keep it here on the drive. Every time B-Dot's in studio, there's a point in the visit where he says, why does this show get off the rails? And I think we saw a very clear example when I wanted to talk about Garrison Brooks potentially playing the three, and amid Roy saying that newsworthy statement, all B-Dot was interested in doing and not allowing the show to move in a different direction was talking about the pronunciation of number five, Armando.
Armando.
Which is so clearly, going into this commercial break, the biggest waste of time I've committed to today.
You know what?
It's Armando Bacot, you know, and it's what? Nothing else. Roy mispronounced his name. Roy does that all the time. I expect the unofficial mascot of Tar Heel basketball to know that. This is me taking you to school before you take me to grammar school.
Clearly. And listen, it was just so foreign to my ears to hear Roy just jump out and say Bacot. So I just mentioned that, not knowing that every time I said it, it was going to trigger the Armando jingle. And then you would come back and you would say his name. That would trigger it. It wasn't just me. Don't just put this on me. Don't act like I come in here and I derail the show. I'm just in here talking to you the same way I would be talking as if I were in my car.
Hit
when
the
you
sound,
played
Robert.
That, I would have said, did he say Bacot?
Armando.
Is that sound getting old to anybody?
Probably. Not to me. Because I love Armando.
Next basketball season, we'll have another, at least one more full season of that. Let's get to BDOT's grammar school.
Josh Graham has his own way of speaking.
In high school, he didn't play sports, but he did wear a helmet.
And just when you think it can't get any worse.
My English teacher wanted to flunk me in junior high.
Damn.
Thanks a lot. Next semester, I'll be 35.
Josh is going to attempt to learn BDOT's vernacular.
I'm from the old school. I got a little street knowledge. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
It's time for BDOT's Grammar School.
You know, Josh, as a Tar Heel fan, I really would like for you to double back onto the Garrison Brooks at the three conversation because I'm interested in what that lineup would look like.
I think it would be...
Now's not the time, Josh. Right now, it is time for me to take you to grammar school. What happens is I teach you different slang words that you may not be familiar with. You have five words here. Three are new words. Two words are words that we've already discussed. All right? Your first word is a new word. What does it mean to clap back? Clap back. C-L-A-P-B-A-C-K. Now, if you are listening, you know that you can call up and assist Josh if he should happen to use a lifeline. But for some reason, Robbie, people don't call to help because I think they like to see Josh struggling.
Like, here's the thing. I see you all tweeting me right now, right? People who want to see me in my underwear. People suggesting I go on BDOT's 3 Live Crew show.
Yeah. I thought like, about that now.
I don't know what I would do on BDOT's 3 Live Crew show. Like, what context would it make
Drank
sense?
Drank would eat you alive.
That'd be hilarious.
He would eat you alive.
In what way?
That nasally pitch?
Yeah.
Drank will have a ball with that.
Come on.
See, so I'm looking at all this, and none of you guys are willing to help me. I need lifeline.
Yeah.
At 336-777-1600.
Well, you have a friend here in the studio today, Josh. Maybe if you
yes.
get cornered, Tyler can help
there's
you.
There's no chance that my friend from Memphis,
yeah, right,
who's
he's
also
from
Baltimore, I don't think he knows any of these
Are
things.
Are you crazy? Listen, again, we always say the urban vernacular is not race specific.
I know. And I'm not saying it's race specific. I'm saying I know my friend Tyler.
But Tyler's from Baltimore and Memphis. It don't get much more urban than that.
I was
they have terms
from
up
Baltimore
there we don't
too.
Even know. Like, I feel like JIT is JIT Florida.
Is, yeah, JIT not, is. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that is Florida word.
Clap back.
Clap back. That's the word for today, Josh, on Josh BDOT's Grammar School. Clap back. What does it mean to clap back?
It means to kind of fire off at somebody in a way to respond to somebody. Like, if somebody, you know, comes at you, you clap back at them. You know, even stronger than what they did coming at you initially.
That is 100% correct, Josh Graham.
Thank you.
Good job. Definitely clap back as a response to retort with a little bit of sass. Your second word is a review word, Josh. This is a word that we've already had on the show and you got wrong. So we're going to bring it back to see if you can get it right now. What is a set? S-E-T. What is a set? Now we went over this word. I believe it was around May 6th.
A set. 336-777-1600.
on the review words.
A set.
Look, Tyler, just nod. Do you know what a set is, Tyler?
God. There's no chance that Tyler has no clue.
He put a thumbs down, Tyler did.
Robert, I might have to use the lifeline now. What's a set?
See, and you got to wonder. I'm always going to Hollywood square you, dude. Yep. I'm going to say a, and you can choose to believe me or not.
Robert, this is a lifeline.
I know. I'm a terrible lifeline.
It's supposed to help me.
I'm a terrible lifeline.
You're supposed to help me.
I'm like a life preserver on the Titanic.
I only have you because no one in the audience
calls. Someone's calling in right now. Would you prefer I pick that up?
Yes, pick up the call. Because now I feel like when you're unwilling to help as a lifeline, then the guy's calling. They're also going to do the same damn thing.
No, it's not fair. I like the way that he goes with the Hollywood Squares approach because that still leaves the ball in your court to determine, do I trust Robbie?
That's deceptive, though. If you know it, help me.
help. Have you seen the Kevin Hart?
Help me.
Help me. Please.
You got Michael in Winston-Salem, and he says he knows what a set is because he was in the Army and he had friends out west.
Michael in Winston-Salem, please help me.
Yeah, Josh, I'm from downtown Baltimore. I'm in the Clifton Park area, Bel Air Edison. But
go O's.
I didn't know what set was until I was in the military, and set is a West Coast word. It means like when you wave your hand in the air and you put your fingers up, and you're saying what area code or like what side of the town you're claiming. Okay. That's what a set is.
All right, I'm going to go with that. Thank you, Michael, in Winston-Salem. It's kind of like where you're repping, where you're from. Your set's like where you're from. It's your house. It's your place.
That is 100% correct.
Thank you!
He did not give you the correct definition. You figured it out on
your
own. No, I needed Mike.
Yeah.
That's Mike helping me rather than Robert about to tell me a bleeping riddle.
Hey, but that counts as two lifelines because he used me and the phone.
You did not. I did not use you at all.
You
were about to tell me a riddle.
You enacted it.
I did like, well, what the caller was talking about was throwing up your sets. When you throw up your hands and throw the signs or the usually this gang affiliation, but when you throw where you're from up with your hands, that's throwing up your set. Your set is exactly what Josh just said, though. Your set is your neighborhood, and big shouts to Baltimore. New word today. It is an acronym, three letters. FTP.
I hate the acronyms.
Do you?
I never know them.
Yeah.
Robert,
are you trying to figure these out?
Robert, I'm definitely using you on this one. I
knew
you knew it.
Man.
I know you know this.
Yeah, but
I'm using you. I can't use two lifelines on the same one. I need your help. Help me. FTP.
They use multiple lifelines on Millionaire all the time.
WTF, you need to help me on FTP.
Okay, well, I'll tell you. How about I tell you what the first and last letters mean?
Just tell me what it is.
All right, it means F. And then the last letter is police. How did you not get this, dude? You used a lifeline on this.
I think
I got it now.
I think it's something that's not very kind to the police.
Yeah, you're probably right on that, Josh. As a matter of fact, YG just filmed a video for that song in the protest with the 30,000 people in L.A.
Got it.
12. Number three. This is a throwback word, Josh. What is a kickback? Josh, what is a kickback? This was another word we gave on. No, this was April the 22nd we discussed a kickback. What is a kickback?
I think it might be a place to get dope, a place to get drugs. A kickback.
That is 100% incorrect.
Oh.
You said that last
time. I did.
One of them was.
Yeah.
I remember one of them was.
Not everything is a bodega. Like, I just imagine.
Wait,
think
do you
about,
get drugs from a bodega?
Sometimes.
Gee, it depends. But a kickback. You are kicking back. You're hanging out.
Yeah.
Your feet are up.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It's a kickback. You get to enjoy yourself. You get with the homies. You go to your crib. We go and have a kickback at Josh's.
A little bit smaller than a party.
Absolutely.
Let's wrap this thing up.
I'm moving, brother. All right. Next word for you. Final word. What are the dozens?
Oh, no.
What are the dozens, Josh?
The dozens or a dozen?
The dozens.
Got it. The dozens.
Got it. I like when he says that, but he really has no clue.
The dozens.
The dozens.
I'm gonna steal Matt McConaughey's word.
Now, what was interesting about this, I actually used this in defense of you. I was talking to Ross on IG one day, and I was like, and we were talking about the fat shaming that you were doing that day.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about the fat. We weren't fat shaming because we pointed out there are no fat college basketball coaches other than
that are alive.
Bob Huggins.
Facts. And when I was talking to him about that,
college basketball coach,
he was telling me how he felt. And I threw this word out there, and he was like, what the hell is that? And I said, oh, I'm definitely going to use that on grammar school.
The dozens.
What are the dozens?
Is that like your social media following? Yeah, man. I rely on the dozens. The dozens, they're looking out for me kind of a thing.
Is that your guess? Or
that's my guess.
Okay.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
It was a horrible one. The dozens is a game where you insult each other. It's just basically going back and forth talking trash about each other. That's when we're shooting the dozens. When we're just joking on each other, going back and forth with jokes. Those are called the dozens. And we grow up shooting the dozens. Gosh, Josh, you did pretty bad this week, bro.
I won.
Did you? Let's see. You didn't get kicked back.
It took you three lifelines, though.
Yeah, man.
Clap back, a set, and FTP.
Yeah. You got three.
That's right.
Congratulations, Josh.
Thank you. I won.
Yeah. Congratulations, I won.
We need to figure out what this bet's going to be.
We do.
So, BDOT got mad that I said the Cowboys are going to win less than 9.5 games.
Because you're obnoxious.
He thought it was going to be more than 9.5.
I know it is.
So he wants me to wear a whitey-tidy pair of underwear.
They're called tidy-whities.
Tidy-whities. And run around the building with nothing else on except maybe a cowboy hat.
Mm-hmm.
If the Cowboys do win double-figure games. And in return, if he doesn't win, he would sing two karaoke songs of our choosing in studio. I don't think that's enough of a punishment because I think BDOT secretly is actually a pretty good singer. And he also has no shame. So I don't think that's that big of a punishment.
They said I should do it in a Redskins hat.
It's not equal to the punishment of having to go all the way down to my Skippies and run around the building.
Well, you should have a horrible yours should be worse than mine because of how disrespectful you're being to my Cowboys. So yeah, it should be worse.
Yeah, I mean, he started the bet. So I mean, he has less leverage than you do.
I started the bet.
Well, no, it was based off you saying that they won't, though.
Yeah. Correct. And I said, you want to put together a bet because he was the one feeling so confident. I didn't say, BDOT, hey, your opinion's wrong. It's flatly wrong. He was attacking me saying, oh man, it's definitely
now you're the victim.
Off your statement. So are we signing this contract or what?
And then when you said, do I want to make it fun? I said, absolutely. What do you got? You threw out the bet. I threw out what I wanted.
I'm down for the underwear.
Yeah.
I just don't want to be running around outside this building.
Hmm.
I'll do a photo shoot.
Hmm.
And we can print it on calendars.
If you want to.
Okay. So the new stipulations of the rules are, one, if Josh wins, BDOT will come on the show and sing two karaoke songs of Josh's choosings.
Correct.
If the Cowboys get 10 or more wins, Josh will do a photo shoot in his underwear, which is 12 pictures for an entire calendar spread. Are those terms agreed upon?
Hell yeah, from my end, yes.
BDOT to yes. Josh, are you a yes?
Boxers.
Of my choosing.
Dude.
Of my choosing.
I'll even settle for Cowboy Speedo.
You would rather have Cowboy Speedo than briefs?
He would rather.
Than whitey tidies.
Okay.
Or tidy whitey.
Okay. So, God, I'm going to have to do so much editing to make this one cut. I'm going to read it again so I don't have to.
Okay, go.
All right. If Josh wins, BDOT will have to sing two karaoke songs of Josh's choosing on the show. If BDOT wins, Josh will have to do a photo shoot in underwear of BDOT's choosing that are not whitey tighties.
Cowboy Speedo.
Okay.
Cowboy Speedo.
Are those terms agreed upon by both parties?
And the cowboy hat.
And the cowboy hat.
Yes.
Yes.
And a yes. These terms are official. We got a bet, fellas.
He would rather do a calendar versus running around the building.
I'm going to make calendars out of this. You do not understand. We're going to sell them and give the money to St. Jude. Like, this is going to be a huge fundraiser, BDOT. I'm so glad this has been agreed upon. Come on, Cowboys. I'm officially a Cowboy fan.
We just made so many Cowboy fans this break.
I'm trying to figure out how to include FTP in a tease. B-Dot, thanks for being here, by the way.
Thanks for having me, man. Love Wednesdays.
That's quite it's quite a clapback for you there.
Nah.
To my opinion that I had. Like I said, the Cowboys were going to win less than 10, and you clap back, you know?
Okay, that's fair.
But, I mean, it's always cool when you're here. It just feels like a kickback, man.
Yeah, good job.
But then, the dozens. Insults back and forth here, you know?
Yeah.
That's what we're doing. Yeah. But it feels like home. Feels like my set. Let's get...
I'm done. I can't.
Jerry Richardson statue is no longer in front of Bank of America Stadium. We'll talk about that next.
Let's go. And QID. You're on the drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Uh-huh, honey.
Robert is very good sometimes at picking the music on this show. Sometimes it has deeper meaning. Are you playing Bound 2 because we're talking about Reggie Bush and once upon a time he dated Kim Kardashian?
I sometimes I do stuff and you don't pick up on it, but I'm tickled you found it today.
That music video still resonates in my brain because of the cover that Seth Rogen and James Franco did.
100%.
Where Seth Rogen has no clothes on and he's on James Franco's back on a motorcycle the way that Kim Kardashian was on Kanye West's motorcycle. But let's not get sidetracked. We have a lot to do. The NFC West over-unders we're going to do in a second. I have my five greatest college football players of the last 20 years. A lot of people have been tweeting me about this today. Robert was trying to get the list before this segment just a few minutes ago. We have a friend of mine in town from Maryland and Memphis, respectively, just hanging out. And he says he's really curious what's going to be on this list. Let me just get to the honorable mentions very quickly. Adrian Peterson, he is an honorable mention because he's not the best running back I can throw on this list, but the numbers are really damn good in his 3 years playing with the Sooners. They got smoked by USC in that bowl game in 2004. When you think of him, you think about the big games he's played. He lost. He lost to USC. They lost to Boise State in his last game in that Fiesta Bowl where you had the Statue of Liberty play to end it for a two-point play. Cam Newton just didn't play long enough. One great year. Can't include him in the top five for that reason. Andrew Luck, tremendous numbers, but USC was already down at that point. The Pac-12 wasn't great. So much like I can't put Christian McCaffrey even in the honorable mentions, Andrew Luck's held back in that regard. Now let's get to the actual list.
Number five.
Tim Tebow. People think that Tebow is probably number one on this list, considering the national championships, considering the numbers he put up. Robert, I think he had between 140 and 150 touchdowns his entire career, throwing and passing. And majority of those were through the air. But he did have the most talent, I think, of any player who's played in that decade, either him or Ken Dorsey. And I don't think Ken Dorsey's going to be anywhere on this list. Just so much talent all over the place with those Florida Gator teams up front, skill position, defense. It was really a team effort. Urban Meyer, one of the best coaches of this generation, too. So Tim Tebow is at number five.
Number four.
Vince Young. This was tough. Vince Young versus Tim Tebow. Who do you put higher? I just think Young was a better college player. I think if you needed to put everything on one player's shoulders, you leaned on Vince Young. I would trust Vince Young more than I trust Tim Tebow. After all, Tebow's first title, it was Chris Leak at the controls, and Leak was able to win a national title because of all that talent that was around him, and Urban Meyer was the coach. Vince Young, gosh, that year he had in 2005 gets remembered most, but don't forget about the year he had in 2004 that culminated with that game he played against Michigan. He had only like 180 yards passing in that game, but rushed for nearly 200 yards in that game. An incredible college player. Vince Young's at number four.
Number three.
Ndamukong Suh. Had to have a defensive player somewhere. This is the closest, I believe, in the 21st century, a defensive player came to winning a Heisman Trophy. It's only happened once. It was Charles Woodson beating out Peyton Manning. People are still mad about that. How do you not give it to Peyton Manning? However, Charles Woodson's year, if he doesn't win the Heisman that year, you're just pretty much saying it's an offensive player's award. It pretty much is an offensive player's award already, but go back and look at the highlights from Ndamukong Suh, who had 24 sacks, like 40 tackles, all over the defensive line, blocking kicks. He was all over the place, changing a game at a position where in college ball, you don't see many guys who do change the game. Suh at number three.
Number two.
There is a guy who plays for an ACC team in my top five. You want to take a guess who it is? He's at number two, Robert. Plays for an ACC team. Who's at number two on this list?
Just give it to us. Who you got?
Larry Fitzgerald.
Ah.
The numbers he had at Pitt, it's the closest a wide receiver has come to winning the Heisman Trophy. It's, quite frankly, a crime he didn't win the Heisman in the early 2000s. How's this for numbers? 161 catches, 34 touchdowns, nearly 2,700 yards at Pitt. Larry Fitzgerald, the best wide receiver. It's either him or Calvin Johnson we've seen the last two decades. So I have Larry Fitz at number two.
Number one.
Reggie Bush. Reggie Bush is number one on the list. He's the greatest college football player. You play the music coming in. That reminds me of Seth Rogen doing his best Kim Kardashian impression. We don't have college football stars like Reggie anymore. The best schools, they're in college towns, not in the big cities, not in the big media markets. Alabama's in Tuscaloosa, Clemson's in Clemson, and Reggie Bush played in Los Angeles. The last time that USC was relevant. We don't have stars like that anymore. Dating a WWE diva while in college, then Kim Kardashian. He did it all on the field, flashy, and just, I think he was a better version of Marshall Faulk in college. He was Christian McCaffrey before Christian McCaffrey, and he was playing for a team that won 34 in a row. There's a play named after him, the Bush Push. Reggie Bush, he's the number one college player I've seen the last 20 years. Tebow, 5, Vince Young, 4, Ndamukong Suh, 3, Larry Fitzgerald, 2, and Reggie Bush at number 1. Before we get to Nick Carboni, WCNC, let's get to my NFC West over-unders. We've been doing over-unders all week this week. Let's get to them. Best division in football. And let's start with the defending NFC champion, San Francisco 49ers. They're over-unders at 10.5. I'm going under with that. Super Bowl hangovers, it's a real thing. Ask the Carolina Panthers, who went 15-1 a handful of years ago. I want to see if this offense that was a lot different than what everybody else ran can hold up multiple years after defensive coordinators prepare for it. Going into this season, I'm under on the Niners. Seattle Seahawks, over-under 9.5. I'm going over the 9.5 for Seattle. Here's a stat for you. 7 of the last 8 years, really since Russell Wilson's been in the league in 2012, the Seahawks have won double-figure games. So I think they're going to do that again. I think they're going to win the division this year. LA Rams, 8.5's the over-under. I'm going over because I think it's going to be a bounce-back year for Sean McVay. And while you think last year might have been a really big disappointment for the Rams, they still won 9 games. And in the 14-team playoff format that we're going to see this year, they would have gotten in last year if that was indeed the format. So they're going to play a third-place schedule. McVay the coach, 8.5's the number. I think they're going over that. Arizona, this might surprise some people. 7 is the over-under. I'm going under the 7. I think this is the Cleveland Browns of 2020. I'm not convinced that Cliff Kingsbury's the guy, just like I wasn't convinced at all Freddie Kitchens was. I liked parts of what I saw from Baker, just like I liked parts of what I saw from Kyler Murray. We're talking about all these flashy acquisitions. Oh, the Browns got Odell. The Cardinals, they're bringing in DeAndre Hopkins. I don't think it's going to translate to a lot more wins in the most difficult division, so I'm going under 7 for the Arizona Cardinals. San Fran, under 10.5. Seattle, over 9.5. The Rams over 8.5, and the Cardinals under 7. Those are my NFC West over-unders. Nick Carboni, he is, or I guess he was, a few hours ago, right in front of Bank of America Stadium as Jerry Richardson's statue was being carried away by a crane. We'll get some details on what exactly transpired at the home of the Panthers when he joins us next.
Your one-stop shop for sports talk.
Sports.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
It has truly been a wild day around here as we're getting set to watch NASCAR in Martinsville tonight. And NASCAR just put out a statement saying that from here on out, the Confederate flag is going to be prohibited at all NASCAR venues and events. As that was transpiring, we're all trying to react to what the hell just happened at Bank of America Stadium, because we saw right as we were going on the air, there was a crane approaching the stadium, and within an hour, Jerry Richardson's statue and the two Panthers that flanked him were removed from the front of the stadium. The same statue that David Tepper in his opening press conference a couple years ago said he was contractually obligated to keep. The Panthers, they put out a statement saying that it's for public safety or just trying to make sure the statue was going to remain in place. So I want to get perspective from somebody who actually has been out front of the stadium as this has happened. It's Nick Carboni, who is making a first-time appearance in the Triad on this show from WCNC. He's the sports director in the Queen City. Nick, when did you get word that something might be happening at the stadium today?
Just after I kicked off my shoes and came back from a shoot and figured I'd edit from my couch for the rest of the day. So it's kind of how these things happen, Josh, right? When you least expect it, although there was some word brewing that protesters were either going to deface it or attempt to take it down, which if you've seen the statue, that would have been difficult to do. So I think it had been at the back of our minds here that the statue might be removed, as the Panthers are saying, for public safety concerns. But I think long term, this is something that they probably have wanted to do since David Tepper bought the team a couple years ago.
Joe Person reported that a Panther spokesman told him that they didn't know if it was permanent or temporary. But you said that there were rumors in the city of Charlotte. I haven't seen this anywhere where people at this point are saying they're going to deface the statue. So what do you think happens now over the next few weeks and over the next few months?
Well, Josh, I think, you know, citing public safety concerns, there have always been people that want this statue removed, whether or not it rose to the level that it did really in the last couple of days here. And, you know, there have been protests, but really 99% peaceful. But there's been a groundswell, Josh, lately on social media and within the protests that maybe this is something that should be affected or called for to change. So, you know, a week from now, a month from now, a year from now, what will our climate be? Will our climate allow for a statue that brings this much polarization with it and affects people that see it? Will it, you know, will they allow it to come back and be placed back here without any sort of threat to, you know, take it down, boycott, what have you? I don't think we're in a climate, and I don't foresee us being in a climate where this statue really has a place here in a lot of people's perspectives.
Follow Nick on Twitter at Nick Carboni, WCNC. He's with us here on Sports Hub Triad. I really wanted to have you on because you were in front of the stadium, and I just want you to paint the picture of what exactly that was like, because the word I keep seeing among people who were also there, amazing, incredible, surreal. Just tell me what you saw.
Yeah, absolutely surreal, Josh. I mean, just, you know, living here for 4 years now, basically the life of the statue is 4 years. You know, this thing was permanently etched here. David Tepper begrudgingly kept it here because that was Jerry Richardson's sticking point with the $2 billion sale to Tepper. So to see it actually removed just kind of shows you, as I talked about, the climate we're in right now. Things are changing quickly. NASCAR about, I don't know, a half hour ago, banning the Confederate flag from yeah. all of its events and tracks. So it's just kind of a tangible realization that things are, in fact, changing right now. You know, to see this giant Jerry Richardson statue be hoisted high above Graham Street here in front of Bank of America Stadium. I tweeted some pictures of it. It was absolutely incredible to see. And a lot of people gathered. I mean, this is the uptown area. Word spread very quickly, as you could imagine. Also, people are out walking. It's a popular place to walk your dog or go for a jog, too. A lot of people stopped and watched. I talked to, you know, I want to say 5 or 6 people. All were in favor of the statue's permanent removal. And those go back to even the diehard Panthers fans, you know, who say Jerry Richardson, yes, he brought the team here. But what was alleged in terms of workplace sexual harassment and racism, you know, outweighs all of that to them.
Before we let you go, Nick, what should go in its place? If you're thinking off the top of your head, like, I mean, maybe I don't think it's going to be. I mean, there are a ton of players that are pretty darn good you could put there. Sam Mills statue's already up. What goes in its place?
Man, I mean, you know, you've got so many options now that are no longer with the team that could work. You know, you talk about Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, maybe eventually Cam Newton. I mean, we've just gone through a 10-year cycle of multiple phases of this franchise. You know, there's a guy named Mr. Coleman who's a beloved Panthers staffer that greets you at the door. Some of us have suggested putting his statue up. I mean, that's, people want to see people that they know and think to be good people that have represented this franchise somehow immortalized in front of this building. You know, so there's all sorts of options.
Sir Purr, maybe. Like, get a Sir Purr statue up,
you know,
there.
I don't think we have to worry about any future allegations against Sir Purr, but you just never know, do you?
Yeah, you got to be careful. Follow him on Twitter, at Nick Carboni, WCNC. It's good to have you on in the Triad, man. Keep up the great work.
Hey, Josh, I appreciate coming on, and anytime, we'll see you around.
You got it. That's Nick Carboni. And it really is surreal. I can picture exactly what he's talking about. I'm about to go home. I'm just going to hang out and finish some work from my house and on my couch. And then you learn that the Panthers statue, the Jerry Richardson statue, is coming down. And you certainly have to cover that. Robert, you thought you were going to get out of doing a Dinos Daily today when the Jerry Richardson news happens and everything gets upended, what we were normally going to do. But no, we have that to do. Also, I have the best bets to give out for the NFC over-unders we've delivered throughout today's show. But let's get to Dinos Daily first.
Welcome to baseball!
Come on, Andre, we need mucho home runos.
Sell the whole team, Josh. Sell the team. I don't know why you're doing this K-pop dance. I don't even know if that's a dance. But it's not changing my mind. It's not changing my mood. I'm done with the Dinos. They played the Doosan Bears today, Josh.
As they've been playing the last few days.
And they lost today. That's the other big difference.
Hey, they won the series, though.
Hey,
Two out of three.
Series schmeries. They need to win all of them.
Robert.
We're not losing to the Bears.
It's a 144-game schedule.
I don't
care
about
that
anymore.
You can't get hung up on singular losses. You're like me as a kid when I would cry after the Carolina Hurricanes lost. And someone would tell me, Josh, it's October the 15th. This season runs all the way through April. And they ended up, like, I think going to the Stanley Cup for the first time that year in 2002.
I don't care. I don't care about wins. I don't care about losses. I don't care if you just leaned over in your
chair.
You
do care about losses.
I don't care anymore. I'm all the way out of the Dinos. But either way, here is your detailed Dino update. The Dinos didn't put up much of a fight today, scoring one, getting seven hits, but just could not get everybody home. My man Minwoo Park, rough day. Three at-bats, only one hit. The only guy that got to score a run for the Dinos was my guy, Yui Ji Yang. I talked about him last time. He's slowly growing on me. If I didn't hate this team. And also, Mike Wright is not the only American pitcher. Or I don't know if this guy's American, but he's definitely not Korean. Yeah, Drew Rakinski, cut him. Trade him. I don't want him on the team anymore. Six innings pitch, Josh. Only three strikeouts. Not going to cut it.
I don't think you're allowed to trade in KBO because they're so restrictive on like who's allowed in a locker room that you're kind of locked in with your roster.
Don't trade him. I don't want anything back for him. Drew Rakinski, you're awful. You're garbage. You made us lose today. Okay, so basically, I feel like the Dinos are going in the trash can.
They're 24-7.
But the Bears, who are in second, just closed another game closer to them. And I don't even like them being this close. I like sitting on the top of the standings like the Dinos are right now. They're four games ahead of the Bears. Hey, I'm done with it. 24-7, not good enough.
All right.
They need to win more games.
There's Dinos Daily for today. If you have thoughts, I guess this is a last call for phone calls on the Jerry Richardson statue being removed. 336-777-1600. If you want in, what are your thoughts on this statue being removed out front of Bank of America Stadium? What potentially do you think could be a replacement there? Because I'll tell you the first thing that comes to mind, a good old Steve Smith statue, I think would play pretty well in front of Bank of America Stadium. But you got to make it actual size. He's 5'9". Like, have you ever walked up on a statue that you're taller than?
There's a statue in Louisville of these two kids playing. Yes, I'm always taller than them because I always jump over it.
Right. But I mean, like, when you think sports statues, you think big, strong.
Rocky Balboa and
superhero.
Yeah.
Steve Smith is 5'9". I have a feeling. Actually, see if you can find what Jerry Richardson's height was or is. He played wide receiver for the Colts way back when, but what's Jerry's height? Because that statue's a lot bigger than whatever you were about to tell me. I guarantee you that.
He was 6'3".
Okay. That statue's a lot bigger than that. Like when you see cranes trying to carry this thing away, yeah, Jerry Richardson. It's just, imagine that request. I think if I'm not mistaken, I think it was a birthday gift to himself. Like, it was him acknowledging himself for all he did for the Carolina Panthers and rewarded himself with a statue that had two Panthers growling next to him while he held a football out front. Like, is there anything that's more narcissistic in the sport of football than that statue? Because if so, go ahead and tell me what that might be. And if it's not a Smitty statue you replace it with out there, maybe Julius Peppers, North Carolina through and through?
What if Bojangles bought the statue?
Ooh.
And they have a Bojangles like Jake DeLong.
And Jerry Richardson loved Bojangles. He always had the big gulp when he was sitting in his owner's box. Big bow guy. It was always bow time for Jerry. So these are things to consider.
Probably also never no time for Jerry.
Whoa.
Oh.
On Twitter at Sports Up Triad if you want to chime in on today's show. Let's get to the best bets among my NFC over-unders.
Your attention, please. Please do not turn off your radio.
Why?
Okay. I've got four. Four over-unders that I wouldn't mind putting some cheddar on. And let's start with the NFC West, Seattle Seahawks over 9.5. When I have good stats, odds are that's something I want to, you know, roll behind. Seven of the last 8 years, which is Russell Wilson's entire tenure with the Seahawks, they've won double-figure games. I think Seattle overachieved last year considering the roster and injuries that were in place. I think they're going to be healthier. I like the addition of bringing back Bruce Irvin. I like bringing Greg Olsen in as another safety valve option for Russell. I think the running backs are going to be okay for them in Carson and Penny. They also added Carlos Hyde, which I didn't know about. Seattle, this is an easy double-digit win team. I get the NFC West is difficult. I like Seattle to win double-digit game.
Put some money on it.
Thanks, Mike Houston. Tampa Bay, over 9.5 as well. The Bucs, they're three games better than what they were last year, adding Tom Brady to replace Jameis Winston. You're taking away 30 interceptions. You got to go the last 4 years of Brady games played to get to the 30 interception total that Jameis had last year. And even with all those picks, they still finished 7-9, and six of those nine losses were by one possession. I trust Brady in close games. I trust him not to turn over the ball. Bruce Arians, this is his second year, so I think it's going to be even better than his first. The pickups they made in the offseason bolstered the secondary, so I think a lot of the problems are fixed with Tampa. I like where they went in the draft, too. The Buccaneers are going to go and win double-digit games. They're over 9.5.
Put some money on it.
This one might surprise you. Washington Redskins over 5.5. I think coaching really matters in the NFL. Going from Jay Gruden, then an interim coach in Bill Callahan that led to Washington winning just three games a year ago, to an adult in Ron Rivera, who in his entire tenure with Carolina did not win fewer than six games. I think he wins six his first year, maybe even seven, with Washington. When Rivera was at his best with Carolina, it was running the football and playing strong defense. The Redskins, they just picked up Chase Young. I think they have players at all three levels of that D. Dwayne Haskins, I don't know. You don't know exactly what he's going to be this year, but if he's not great, there's a chance Alex Smith could be ready to go. As crazy as that sounds, if he is ready, that's a winner at quarterback. I think the defense, in addition to Ron Rivera being a defensive coach, you got Jack Del Rio coordinating things over there, and a strong run game. Robert mentioned that Bryce Love, the North Carolina native who went to Stanford, he was out pretty much all of his rookie year. He's coming back in support of Geis in the backfield. I really like this Washington team. Not really feeling the wide receivers or the tight ends at all, but up front, you got Morgan Moses. It's a decent O-line. It's good enough to run the ball and play strong defense. Washington's over 5.5.
Put some money on it.
And lastly, the hot team this offseason, the Arizona Cardinals, the over-under is 7. I'm going under. I don't buy Cliff Kingsbury the same way I didn't buy Freddie Kitchens last year. Coaching, once again, it matters positively and it matters negatively. I'm not convinced that this team's going to be competitive when you got the Rams, who won 9 games last year, the Seahawks and the 49ers, who were arguably the top two teams in the conference. I just think the schedule's too tough. I think they're this year's Cleveland Browns. Hey, look, they got DeAndre Hopkins, just like last year. Hey, look, they got Odell Beckham Jr. But coaching wasn't competent. Baker Mayfield, who was good his rookie year, didn't really translate it to his second season after teams got tape on him. I think it's going to hurt Kyler Murray a little bit in year two. The Cardinals are going to win under 7 games.
Put some money on it.
So those are my bets. Seahawks over 9.5, the Bucs over 9.5, Redskins over 5.5, and the Cardinals under 7. Fun show today. A lot of stuff happening. A lot of moving parts. Tomorrow, Darren Vaught's going to join us, as will Adam Gold. I think we might have a visit with Ed Hardin, who's in Martinsville for the race tonight. And by the end of the week, Riley Skinner, the Wake Forest Hall of Fame inductee, Wake Forest Sports Hall of Fame inductee, David Hale, college football writer from ESPN. So a lot of stuff happening on the show. However, and wherever you're listening, we appreciate that. Robert, what do we got in Ticket to the House?
If a blind squirrel ever finds this, he's going to go nuts.
We take it to the house next.